Alrighty, gang, welcome back to the Gutowski Files, starring Stephen Gutowski. He is the founder and editor and reporter over at TheReload.com. That's TheReload.com, spelled like it sounds. Do me a favor and go over there and check them out. Give them a look. They're in a lane, kind of like ASP. They're in a lane that no one else is kind of in, and they're doing reporting that you can live with. It doesn't make you feel gross and want to take a hot shower when you're done reading it, because it's not slanted. It is straight, sane, sober, down the middle reporting. Stephen, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Stephen and I try to schedule these, and we schedule this one a little late in the week, and I had kind of forgotten and made other plans, and now, so I haven't eaten yet, and we had a thing with a sponsor that went weird, so I had to do a bunch of editing, and it's been a whole thing, but I'm doing okay. I'm just, at this point, just hungry. I'm thinking about Jersey Mike's. I'm thinking about it. It's number 13.
Yeah, man. Number 13, Mike's Way, extra mayo. That's what I get.
This here's the secret.
Not a Jersey Mike's ad, by the way. But
some free advertising for Jersey Mike's. The move, if you haven't done it before, is to get the 13. If you like, you know, all those different meats, it's like five or six kinds of meat. Have them put the meat and cheese on the flat top grill and let that sit for about 2 or 3 minutes. Melt the cheese, and it brings out the flavor of the meat. You got to try it once and let me know what you think. It's fantastic.
I could see that. Yeah. Make it into a hot sub.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
basically. Hot hoagie.
So that's right. You are from Philly. It is a hoagie where you're from.
They should be calling it hoagies. They're supposed to be from Jersey.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. All right, Jersey Mike's, get your act together. Start selling hoagies. All right. Well, so we have a couple stories regarding the NRA today. The first one is not great news. There is an article over at The Reload written by our own Stephen Gutowski entitled "Gun Control Groups Outraise NRA Political Operation in February." So I'm assuming this means that all of the sort of gun control groups that you've heard of, Everytown USA and that sort of thing, outraised them politically. Is this a new thing? Because I didn't realize that the NRA was consistently outraising them. So is this new? Yeah. And what does it mean, do you think?
It is new. The NRA has consistently outraised and outspent the major gun control groups in political elections. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about groups. All these groups are made up of a number of legal entities, right? The NRA is really like six or seven different legal entities. And they do that because you can do different things with different entities. You know, the tax implications of them are different. And so, they have a 501c3, a 501c4. They have, they actually have a bunch of 501c3s. That's like your, what you would think of as a charity where you give money and it's tax deductible and so forth. And they're only allowed to use that money on certain things. So, you know, in the NRA, the stuff that most people really like about the NRA is, you know, the gun safety training, education programs, competitive shooting programs, that stuff's all in different 501c3s. They own like a big range that they operate, and that's its own legal entity. That's a 501c3. The membership stuff, we talk a lot about NRA membership, right? That's actually the 501c4, which is an organization where they don't have to disclose their donors. You don't get a tax write-off if you donate to that, but mm-hmm. it's something where they don't have to say who's giving money to it. And then there's more rules about how you use the money. Like the C3s can't spend on political stuff. Right. The C4 can, but only in certain ways. Right. Issue mm-hmm. advocacy. NRA membership, when you buy a membership to the NRA, that money goes to the 501c4. Okay. And then you have this sort of political groups, the strictly political groups, the political action committees, and then what people call super PACs. And so those are the groups that we're talking about with this, the political action committees and the super PACs. And they can spend money, you know, by giving it directly to candidates, or they can make in what are called independent expenditures, right? Where they can go out and like buy advertising. That's usually the NRA spends a lot of advertising, you know, attacking people that disagree with its agenda, right? Mm-hmm. Very common thing. You see this in every major political group that exists.
Sure.
And so one thing that you can tell, though, with the PAC is how much money they're raising each month. They have to report it to the Federal Elections Commission. And the PAC has to disclose who its donors are and how much money they brought in. There's limits on how much you can give to a PAC, but they can do a little more. They can, like, give directly to candidates. Super PAC, there's no limit on how much money you could give it, but it can only do independent expenditures, so like buying ads and things. Mm-hmm. Anyway, right now, those political groups, the NRA raised about just under $500,000 in February through those entities. Whereas if you look at the major gun control groups, every town, like you mentioned, Giffords is really the biggest player in this, the Giffords mm-hmm. PAC on the gun control side. And then Brady would be another one that's pretty small, but they're in there as well. Giffords itself almost outraised the NRA. It was about $20,000 short of the NRA's total, but you add in the $200,000 or so that every town raised, and the, you know, $60,000 or so that I believe off the top of my head here, that Brady raised, and basically the gun control groups, they add those three together and you're getting nearly $750,000 in fundraising for February. So, you know, they're outraising them, and I guess to circle back to your original question here, that was not always the case and has not usually been the case. The NRA has outraised and outspent the gun control groups in this arena, the political realm, for a long time. And really, there was only one election cycle in recent memory where that didn't happen. That was 2018. 2016, they massively outspent the gun control groups. 2020, even with, their sort of corruption scandal started in 2018, 2019. And even with that going on, they were still outraising, outspending these major gun control groups combined. And the same thing was true in 2022 as well, in the midterm election then. But doesn't appear like that's going to be the case this time. And on top of that, you know, if you just compare how they're doing now to how they did in the previous presidential elections, the last two presidential elections, which are good analogs because we have the same candidates running again. But, you know, in 2016, the NRA raised and spent more than $50 million, which was a record for them. 2020, they didn't do as well. They came in just under $30 million. And in the Februarys for both of those election cycles, the NRA raised significantly more than they raised this February. So we're at under $500,000 this February. If you go back to, 2020, February, 2020, they raised about 900,000. And if you go back to 2016, they raised, over 1.3 million just in February.
All right. So two questions, two-parter. First question is there any way for us to quantify, or do you have any sense for how much the recent legal problems and civil suits and lawsuits have had to do with this? Are we losing membership in the NRA? Is that part of the reason? The other question, I don't know if you would have an answer to this, but is there any way to know if the people that were giving their money to the NRA are maybe finding another group, maybe a local group, or some other way to facilitate this sort of legislation and education, or do we know?
Yeah. So I would say that the membership drop has had an impact. Now, like I talked about earlier, the membership part of the NRA is a separate legal entity, right? It's the C4. And so those numbers aren't included in what we're talking about here.
Okay.
The money that group has raised, but you have to imagine, you have to understand, right, that it's the same fundraising pool, the same donor pool. Like you're most of the people who are giving to the NRA's, what they call it, the Political Victory Fund. It's their Political Action Committee, or the NRA Victory Fund, which is the name for the Super PAC. These groups all have, it's always Action Fund, Victory Fund,
you know, big, bold, exciting
all
words,
call their things the same stuff. But, you know, it gets confusing to wade through them all. But basically, the people who are given those groups are very likely also NRA members. And so if you lose 1 million, maybe 2 million members, we don't know exactly how much they've lost at this point. We've had NRA board members say different numbers in recent months here that we talked about on the show previously. But certainly they're down more than 1 million, maybe as many as 2 million from their peak in 2018. And you'd have to imagine that is probably a pretty big reason why they have lost momentum in this political fundraising round too. Now, they still have a pretty good amount of money, cash on hand. They haven't been spending much of anything. They've only spent like $75,000 in this election cycle so far, which is way down compared to the gun control groups and way down compared to how they historically performed. But they do still have somewhere around $12 million that they can spend right now. And presumably they'll be raising more as the months go along. But I think another thing that's going to keep dragging them down is this legal limbo that they're in, right? I mean, this February is when these numbers are from, and February is when we got the NRA corruption trial, right? And the New York jury found that they had not safeguarded their charitable assets, that Wayne LaPierre, the longtime CEO, had caused millions of dollars in harm to the organization by diverting funds to his own personal expenses, stuff we've talked about, you know, obviously at length here on the show before, but I think that all has an impact. And then as far as other groups kind of picking up the slack that the NRA is leaving out there, unfortunately, if you look at the other gun control groups that people talk about most or you hear about most, they have grown, in some ways, you know, they've grown their income to some of their legal entities, but they've tended to focus much more on lobbying or on, really legal action has been the big thing. You've seen a lot of these groups dedicate more resources to legal action and, which, you know, makes sense. There's with the Bruin decision from the Supreme Court, there's a lot of ample ground there. Or even gun safety training. USCCA has tried to grow their program. And they do, a lot of them have PACs. The USCCA has a PAC, GOA has a PAC, NSSF has two different PACs. That's the gun industry's trade group, the National Association for Gun Rights, they have a PAC. But they're not making up anywhere near the slack that the NRA is giving off. I mean, you're talking about, you know, GOA's PAC raised like $500 in February. I think the largest haul in February was something like $20,000 to, it was in the tens of thousands of dollars to the NSSF's PAC. So these aren't groups that are making up this political spending downfall that the NRA is experiencing.
Right. Okay. So let's go move to a slightly more cheerful story again over at The Reload, again by Stephen Gutowski. It's an analysis piece, so it's a member exclusive. So you're getting a freebie here by hearing this on the show. SCOTUS oral arguments bode well for NRA First Amendment claim. So talk to us about that, Stephen. I'm not sure I was aware of this case before you wrote the article.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously we've talked a lot about a lot of negative NRA news the last long while here, because that's the way it's been going for the organization. There hasn't been a lot of positive news to come out of the NRA in recent years, really. But this case is one where you can expect that perhaps the NRA will actually get a win. It's a case called NRA v. Vulo. And it deals with a time in 2018 after Parkland when a New York administrator, financial administrator, Maria Vulo, she's not there anymore, but at the time she had oversight capabilities on insurance companies in New York State. And the NRA had offered a concealed carry insurance program called CarryGuard. And the problem was that, at least in New York's eyes, the program violated their insurance law. So the insurance companies that offered the program were fined and they had to stop offering the insurance. But this administrator, Vulo, went beyond just that issue and forced these companies to stop working with the NRA altogether on any program anywhere in the country. Wow. And then also sent out a guidance letter talking about why, essentially she thinks that companies should not work with the NRA because it's a quote gun promotion group. And that could present quote, reputational risks. Now, reputational risk is something that financial companies are supposed to guard against, and that she, the administrator, had power over deciding whether they were doing that. And so, she's telling them the NRA might present a reputational risk to you because of its political activity, because of its position on gun policy. And then additionally, there was a meeting that she's alleged to have had with a Lloyd's of London executive, where she explicitly told them, if you drop the NRA, I will go easier on you with other infractions that your company has racked up.
That's not cool at all.
Those are the allegations in this case, right? And they're not, it's not a Second Amendment case. This is a First Amendment case, right? The allegation is essentially that she was trying to harm the NRA's ability to share its political message, and using her government power, right? By exerting it on this third party, these insurers, right? And so that's what the Supreme Court was hearing. It was part of, you might have heard of, people may have heard of the, there was a social media case, Murphy, that was heard the same day, right before this NRA case. And so the Supreme Court is taking these two First Amendment cases. And honestly, listening to both oral arguments, I think that the NRA case is much more straightforward, or certainly seemed that's how the justices viewed it. She was pretty explicit about her motivations for why she wanted these companies to stop working with the NRA, and they were because of the NRA's political beliefs.
Right.
And I think you even saw, of course, another key, it's always hard to rely on just what the justices do or say in oral arguments. I think that should be, I'm going to make that very clear. Like you can't know for sure how they're going to come down in a written opinion just based off what they say in oral arguments, what questions mm-hmm. they ask. Now, you know, but of course I think you can glean what their thoughts are from what they say. And so some of them are a little bit easier to read than others. I mean, you know, Thomas and Roberts, it was like the questions that they asked or the way that they asked them didn't give you a ton of insight into maybe where they were at on this case. But whereas, Justice Alito was very straightforward, and he seemed to think that not only was Vulo's, were her actions a violation of the First Amendment, but even if she had been less what he called ham-fisted about it, it still could have been a First Amendment violation. Whereas Justice Jackson had some concerns that went the opposite direction of, you know, well, if we couldn't any advocacy group just say that any kind of regulation or attempt to hold them responsible for something they did wrong, like these insurance programs being, against New York law, well, couldn't they just claim First Amendment violations for any sort of regulatory action against them? So there was a range of views, but I did think that one, the oral arguments tend to go much more in the NRA's favor. And, you know, I've laid out in the piece exactly what the justices said that made me think that, but also there's factors beyond that, including the fact that the ACLU is signed on to represent the NRA in this case. Sort of giving you a pretty good indication of where
strange bedfellows indeed.
Yeah. I mean, that the ACLU, and they got a lot of heat for doing that from their own, in some cases from their own chapters across the country, complaining that they were representing the NRA. And they've even sort of gone out of their way to say they don't like the NRA's views. And don't agree with them on the Second Amendment, but
aren't those the kind of views the First Amendment was, you know, created to, you know, not be suppressed by, you know, the government. And by the way, not for nothing, the idea that this official from New York would go to an independent company, especially a company in another country, I believe they're in England, if I'm not mistaken, or wherever they are, and say, hey, if you stop working with this company, I'll start looking the other way, basically, or I'll give you a break on stuff. It's one thing for example, for a prosecutor under the supervision of a judge with the other party's attorney present to say, it's called a proffer or a free talk, where I say, okay, Gutowski, I know you robbed the bank, but I also know that you know about this terrorist attack. And if you tell me what I need to know about that. We can go easy on you in court, but that's because you're a criminal, right? And so,
and that is what they compared it to, by the way. That is what Vulu's defense compared the situation to, like, sort of.
Yeah, it's not the same thing in my mind at all. Not even close.
Sure, but that was what that was one of their arguments, right, that, you know, this all stemmed from actual legitimate regulatory action, because these programs insured. Well, New York claims that the carry guard insurance, which is very similar to what you see in a lot of concealed carry insurance programs out there, but that it was insuring against criminal acts, I guess, because it pays out, before you are found innocent or guilty in a trial. Like, that's the whole point of it. Yeah. Vulo was claiming a lot of these, you know, her actions were based on the law breaking of the insurance policies. But a lot of the justices were pretty skeptical of that. I would also say that, beyond the ACLU representing the NRA, you know, that meeting that you're talking about, that this alleged meeting that was supposed to have happened with Lloyd's of London, even the government, the federal government, the Department of Justice, wrote in, they technically were not in support of either side in their brief. And they actually also, the Solicitor General, the person who represents the federal government to the Supreme Court, mm-hmm. Spoke in this case. She was, her office was part of the oral arguments. And so even the federal government thought that meeting, as it's alleged to have happened, cross the line into a First Amendment violation, because it was sort of this explicit threat about, do this or we might go after you for other issues. And if you do what we want, we won't go after you for,
right,
for these other, infractions that might have happened. So, that was the other reason. Like, you've got what the justices said at oral argument. Then you've also got the fact that the ACLU is the one on the side of the NRA, which I think is a pretty good sign about how broad the agreement is on the violation here of the First Amendment. And then, of course, the Solicitor General, also technically not on anyone's side, but where they came down in the case puts them more on the NRA's side, which the NRA's lawyer, the ACLU lawyer, actually sort of said that in oral argument too. So, and then of course, beyond those things, you're actually the stage of this case that we're at is also something that's a mark in favor of the NRA winning, because we're talking about a motion to dismiss. So the lower courts had gone through and Vulo wanted this case just thrown out without going to the merits of it. And that's what they're arguing about. So you're at a stage where the bar for the NRA to clear is just that they have to show that there's plausibly a First Amendment violation in what they've alleged. So they don't actually have to prove that meeting happened the exact way that they claim it did. They just have to prove that if it did happen the way that they've claimed, it would be a First Amendment violation. And that was another thing you saw a number of justices kind of point out, like the standard mm-hmm. here is pretty low for the NRA to win. So, you know, I think they're highly likely to come out on top in this case. And you might even see, honestly, a pretty significant majority. Even Jackson, who I mentioned, was pretty skeptical on some of these points from the NRA's side of things. She at other times was saying this probably does fit into a sort of a retaliation framework for a First Amendment violation. Like, she didn't like the NRA's politics, so she went after them to try and retaliate using government power. And even she mentioned, again, that standard issue where it's like the bar here is pretty low for right. the NRA to clear.
Very good. Well, that is our time. I'm going to go get a Jersey Mike's 13 on the grill. I suggest everyone listening, you do the same. And tell them the Act of Self-Protection podcast sent you. Maybe we can get them as a sponsor. Who knows? Probably not, but you never know. And we will follow up on this story as developments come in. And I'm sure Stephen will have, you'll get it even faster over at thereload.com on their website. Don't forget to listen to the weekly Reload podcast. And if you are a member, you can be on the show and you don't have to almost die like you have to almost die to be on my show. You can just be on the show and interact with Steven and some of his crew. How long has that been going on? That's a pretty cool feature.
The requirements to get on my show are much lower than to get on your show, thankfully. I will say, too, actually, this upcoming episode is going to be a deep dive into that First Amendment case we just went over, and it's with a First Amendment scholar from FIRE, which is another sort of libertarian-leaning, I guess you might call them, First Amendment group, to like a libertarian version of the ACLU. It might be a way of perhaps describing them, but the guest was somebody who filed a brief in support of the NRA, but also has argued at the Supreme Court about the First Amendment forces. He's got a lot of expertise, and I think the conversation went really well. So if people want to hear more in-depth idea, get a better in-depth idea of what happened during this case, they should check it out this week once it's out.
Yeah. So if you like this, you'll love that. Folks, do me a favor, go check out thereload.com. Consider getting a membership. Steven does rely on his membership dues to keep his important work, vital work going. I see, by the way, I wanted to mention this. I'm on your site here. Hold on a second. And I noticed, and of course I clicked out of it because I'm bad at computers. I noticed a new name pop up over there. Hold on.
We actually had two gun rights lawyers this week do an analysis of the did we talk about this on the show? There was a federal case where a judge found the prohibition on nonviolent illegal immigrants possessing firearms in the United States.
Yeah, we talked about it
briefly, yeah. Yeah, that case obviously caused a lot of controversy in the gun rights community. There's sort of a lot of division over this. And so we had two different gun rights lawyers write analysis pieces for us that described either side of that debate. So I think those are super valuable, and they're also available for everyone. Usually our analysis pieces are members only, right? But this week those two pieces we made available for everybody. So, I think it gives people a really good insight into the arguments in that situation. And also, where the disagreements happen, over how to interpret Bruin on this point. I think they're really fascinating and really well done.
Yeah, I'm going to read both of those over my original Italian Mike's Way light lettuce, add black pepper and pickles on the side, and of course, jalapeno chips. Steven, thank you so much for coming and seeing us today. And as always, sir, you have the last word.
Absolutely.